You know, the most important people in a hotel are your doorman and or door people, your person, or your cleaning staff. And, you know, because they're the ones who interact with the customer the most, right? And same thing with any brand. Like, you know, the people who work at the stores care. They show up every day. They're solely to help sell your product as a retailer or a brand. And so, you know, you have to kind of empower them.
Welcome to Season 6 of Alchemist X Innovators Inside, the podcast where we explore the world of corporate innovation and dive deep into the minds and stories of innovation thought leaders crafting the future. I am your host, Ian Bergman, and if you're an innovation agitator like me, then this is where you want to be.
Sam, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you, Ian?
You know what? I'm well. It's Friday as we're recording this. I think we're probably going to release on a different day, but I'm ready for the weekend.
Yes.
But I want to say welcome. Thanks for joining us on Innovators Inside. We're thrilled to have you.
No, thank you. And I really appreciate the opportunity to connect with you and some of your audience. And, you know, I'm super excited to sit here on a Friday afternoon and jam away and talk about technology and retail and all those kind of fun things that we like to talk about.
Amazing. Well, let's do it. For folks that don't know, Sam Weiss is the co-founder and CEO of Optimum Retailing, a retail intelligence platform that we're going to hear a lot more about. I'm thrilled, Sam, to have you on the podcast. I think you are operating in, you know, one of those classic areas where there's so much opportunity to leverage data, advancing technology, et cetera, to do new things. And I kind of want to hear all about it.
Thank you.
But I want to start maybe with a little bit of your personal journey, right? You're a serial entrepreneur. You've had a number of companies over a number of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and like how you got to where you are today? Tell us about your journey.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And it's interesting you mentioned that because, you know, talking to a lot of university students these days, you get asked that a lot of, you know, how do you make that decision of where you're going to go in life and what you should do, et cetera. I think for me, my journey had always started of, you know, liking business and really liking not the theoretical side of business as much as the practical side of business. And, you know, understanding what motivates consumers and understanding what motivates economies and you know, kind of the whole business cycle and everything else. But when I was younger, I really thought I was going to go into advertising and, you know, kind of pursued that as an interest and did a few stints at a couple of ad agencies, but realized very, very quickly that I wanted to be, and I often use this term, which is not a great term, but I wanted to be further down the food chain and kind of be more in contact with the customer. So not at the point of building the creative and kind of, you know, doing the execution of the creative, but really kind of seeing what has engaged somebody to make that purchase and why they made that purchase. And that led me into working for, and this is going to age me, working for what's called a pre-press company. So if you think about the world before digital, everything before it went to press had to have pre-press. And that's where we would do things like laying out pages for magazines. We would scan transparencies for photographs that were going to go in the publication. So there's a variety of things that we used to do. And I started working for this pre-press company, which allowed me to work with creative agencies, which allowed me to be within that creative environment. But it was very hands-on, very practical. But also because we did a lot of the execution, I could actually see the results, whether it was a publication, whether it was an event that we did marketing for, or signage that was going into a retail space. So working there led to my first company, which was called CV Studio. And CV Studio was focused on in-store signage. And again, I'm going to age myself, but when I started doing indoor signage, it basically consisted of a red poster that would say sale, solid red with white type, or an orange poster that would say clearance. And that was pretty much indoor signage at the time. You know, every once in a while, there might be a bonus or buy one, get one free. But that was usually like a white background with black copy. And that was about it. So it wasn't very.
I love that there was a visual pattern, a visual language.
It is. Yeah. You know, and it's funny because really for me is what kind of brought like the aspect of there's a huge opportunity here to do a lot more. And a great Canadian story of a retailer that ended up being a huge partner with us is a company called MAC Cosmetics. And many people are familiar with MAC Cosmetics today. They're owned by Estee Lauder. But MAC, I'm based in Toronto, Canada, and MAC Cosmetics was started in Toronto, Canada. And working with the founders there, they really wanted to bring the essence of the brand, which is very colorful. They often would kind of work closely with very unique celebrities. And, you know, the ask was, we need to bring this into the store. And so most of the staff or all the staff in the store always wore black. Most of the products were in black casings. So the creative in the store was really the beauty, the color.
Sure.
And it allowed that aspect to come out. And so that was our first stint in terms of really kind of bringing the next level of what we see today or take for granted today as kind of typical in-store marketing. It's this idea of the brand presence and feeling the brand or understanding the brand when you walk into the space. And then also kind of this concept around the customer journey, right? So we're going to present what we want you to see. We're going to give you visual cues to give you an idea of what we are about the brand. And there could be things in terms of how our staff talks to you or interacts with you. There's a whole variety of things that kind of come into play. So anyways, long, long story. That's how we got into CV Studio. But that really also led to where I am today. But following CV Studio, I launched a company called Method. Method was a store design and fixture building company. So we would actually took it to the next stage where we weren't just doing marketing communications. Now we're looking at the space and how do we create the actual shopping space to be used. And again, this is moving away from what I would call traditional fixtures of countertops and then kind of like, you know, kind of A-frame, like simple metal framing to actually fixtures that are interactive. So things that have fixtures that have power, lighting, you know, you can do lift and touch and touch products. And again, we think that or take that for granted. But, you know, going back many, many years ago, it was not as interesting, right?
Well, and it's a real change in the retail experience, right? To think about that, right? I mean, maybe what, as you're saying, we take some of this stuff for granted, but were you dealing with friction and fear from retail partners? Like lift and touch, right? Has to be kind of like associated with fears of product disappearing and shrinkage and theft or, you know, new designs. Like, tell me a little bit about what that was like. Like, did this feel like change and were people afraid of change?
People are always afraid of change. You know, it is a very tough thing to do as individuals for personal change. But imagine the fear of making a change that could impact positively or negatively for a large corporation, you know? And so, you know, as a vendor, we would often come in and be asked to be innovative. And we would want to bring innovation into the space, but there is a lot of hesitancy. And you're right, you nailed it right there. Like, you know, how are we going to deal with shrinkage? If we put our products out and people can touch it, they're just going to steal it. And back then, no one actually had, everything was behind glass. You know, you did not put things out in front. You did not let people interact with it for the fear that people would steal it. Any Canadians would know this, but many, many, many years ago, there was a store concept called consumers distributing.
Okay.
And if you ever look up consumers distributing, it was a pretty cool model, but you'd walk into their stores and there'll be no products out. Everything was behind the counter, but you'd have catalogs everywhere. And so you go through the catalog in the store, you would have a little sheet that you would check off and write the code for the product that you wanted to get. You would hand the card over to somebody, you'd pay for it. And then you wait 5 or 10 minutes, and then along this conveyor belt, your products will come out from the back. So, you know, you look at those environments, and that was a very typical place that you'd buy, you know, hard goods like, you know, a stereo system or, you know, Walkman and things like that. And now you jump forward to a world that you walk into a Best Buy and you have all these products there. You can touch the vacuum cleaner, you can turn on the TV, you can crank the stereo, right? So, yeah, there's a huge, huge learning. There was a lot of trust that had to exist between consumers and retailers. But understanding that there is going to be more shrinkage, but knowing that, or hopefully, that the positive effect will help drive the revenue, that's that kind of balance, right? And I think that's where, you know, you're touching on kind of making that decision. And, you know, is it the right or wrong decision?
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, it's always hard, right? It's always hard to be sure in the moment. You know, the benefit of hindsight is that you have your 20/20 vision, right? But I want to come back to something you said earlier, right? You said you kind of went this direction because you wanted to be closer to the customer.
Yeah.
Right. And I love that because, to be perfectly honest, I talk to 100 entrepreneurs a week, right? And if there's one thing that I just want to understand, it's how often do they talk to their customers? And kind of it. So, you know, casting back, man, we're going to get to what you're doing today soon, but casting back, like, what were you seeing in your customers, whether they were retail shoppers, whether people interested in new retail experience, et cetera, that was telling you, no, like, it's time for some new ideas?
It was kind of a two-way street. I mean, part of it was my own personal experience as I would go shopping and kind of be in the retail space. Sure. I think the other one, and I said this earlier, is the clients will come to us and ask us to be more innovative. They would ask us to bring, you know, we want the wow factor. You know, we were told once in a meeting that we're doing for an RFP that, you know, the head of trade marketing said to me, he goes, I want to see balloons floating around my store and I want people to be kind of blown away, you know. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, having balloons floating around your store is just going to be triggering your motion sensors all night and you're going to have security there. But yeah. It's this idea that you want to enlighten, you want to be engaging, you want your store to be special. And, you know, if you look at historically and then you look at today, it's gone the full gamut. I mean, we went from very, very busy stores with what we would consider a lot of clutter, too much signage, too many props, you know, not clear path, you know, being able to find things, to kind of a design style that you see now in the Apple store where it's very clean, very linear. There's a very, you know, basic marketing is up, not a lot of information in the front windows. Apple can get away with it compared to other brands, but in general, it's this idea that, you know, how do we simplify it? Another big one, which we really kind of worked and it was very difficult to get retailers to buy into it, was lowering the height of fixtures. So if you think of a Best Buy about 10 years ago, if you walked in, and I'm 6'1".
Old hot industrial warehouse lights.
Exactly. If I'm 6'1", I could not see to the other end of the store, right? These things were probably 8 feet high, a plastic storage on top. I mean, it was just clutter. So this idea, like, let's bring all our fixtures down to a height of about 36 inches. You know, retailers were like, well, we're not going to get enough product out. And they're like, well, no, but people need to see the store in order to draw them in, right? You know, and as part of the customer journey, we want to get you to walk and spend as much time in the store as possible. So, you know, most people know this, but in grocery stores, you know, what are the two most common things that people buy when they go to a grocery store?
I mean, milk and gum. I don't know. What is it?
Close. Milk and eggs. Milk and eggs. So,
so close.
Right. So you know what? We're going to put milk and eggs. Yeah. We're going to put milk and eggs in the far back corner and hide it. So you spend a half an hour walking and in turn, you're going to buy a bag of chips, a case of soda, and everything else as you walk out the store. So, you know, so lowering the heights was really about that experience of like, you know, I'm walking in to buy one thing, but oh God, that TV looks beautiful in the back. Let's go check it out. And oh, that Sonos system beside it sounds amazing. So it's that idea of like allowing you to kind of interact. So who really requests it? It's kind of both. I mean, it's kind of people in the industry who kind of see that retail spaces have to evolve. It's market trends where consumers are expecting more or less. And then on top of it, it's also our clients saying, you know, we haven't really done much with our stores. We want to come up with a next generation store. You know, can you help us kind of visualize what that would look like? And it's really kind of the combination of all three.
And I do love that. And we're going to come back to this thread of like paying attention to sort of the behavior of the people in the stores, right? Like, and what does that tell us about their desires? But let's talk about what you're doing now. You founded Optimum Retailing. Give us the elevator pitch. You got the 90-second pitch. What are you doing and why?
So Optimum Retailing is basically, you know, looking at all my past experience in terms of understanding in-store marketing, understanding kind of store design, store build, and then really feeling frustrated with not fully getting visibility of what is successful and what's not.
Sure.
And, you know, I can't tell you how many times that we, you know, worked you know, crazy hours and got stuff produced and got it in store and, you know, had installers doing stuff in store and all for a major campaign, but never really understanding, was it successful? Did it work? Was the investment worth its while, et cetera? And so to me, Optimum Retailing really was, you know, a way of saying, okay, let's use software to first of all understand what is in our store. So at the beginning, our system really was just a big database. We will capture every single fixture that our clients have in each of their stores. So if your store is on 125 Main Street, we would know the exact floor plan for that store. We would have all the fixtures that you have in that store. We would know all the marketing opportunities you have in that store and anything else that relates to that physical store. And then you multiply that times, say, 700 stores. If our client has 700 stores, all that information goes into our system. And a lot of people, when they hear this, they say, well, that takes a lot of time. I was like, it does take a lot of time to add it to our system. But the amazing thing is once it's there, it's not changing every day. You know, sure. Like the retailer is not changing everything in their stores and moving their store's location of 700 stores on a weekly basis. So once it's captured, it's captured. So from there, it became a very powerful tool in terms of understanding what marketing was in our store last May. You know, for, you know, so we can start going back historically and looking at what products were in the store, what marketing was in the store. If we integrate with things like sales, and if we integrate with things like inventory, we can start really getting a full or holistic picture of what is happening in the store. And so what we do now is we understand of what marketing or campaigns or products are being promoted, where they are physically in the store, and then being able to monitor how well they're being purchased. You know, so here's a good kind of use case or simple example is, do we put our top selling product at the front of the store where people would see it as they're walking by? Or do we kind of go back to the scenario I talked about with grocery where I put our top selling product at the back of the store so that people have to walk through the entire store to get to the back to buy that product? So unfortunately, if people don't see it in the front, does that mean that person walks by and doesn't purchase the product? So right. There's the pros and cons, right? So starting to understand what is the best method, how do we make sure that we get the, you know, kind of hit the targets in terms of a revenue that we want? And the other most important thing about our system, and this is where we really kind of work very carefully with our clients, and they often don't believe us, but we do have to kind of guide them to that point, is that no two markets are the same. And it's obvious, and you laugh, and I often laugh too, but no two markets are the same. Yeah. And they were like, no, you know what? People buy our brand, they love our brand, et cetera, right? You know, and you know, Apple is a good example. I was like, well, no, I guarantee you that there's certain Apple products that might be more popular in some markets that are not in other markets. Yeah. And you know, even at a simple level, when we used to do marketing for stores, what we did is we didn't kind of allocate content to the stores based on what the store should get. We just said, okay, this is a small store, so we're going to send them a small marketing kit. This is a medium store, we're going to send them a medium marketing kit. And then this is a large store, et cetera. The problem is no two small stores are the same size.
Yeah.
And I could have a small store in downtown New York, you know, like in central New York, and I could have another small store in, you know, kind of in the mountain region in Colorado, and they're not going to necessarily have the same customers that are shopping there.
Completely different.
And so why should we treat them the same?
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, you're right. I laugh when you said that, but also I think there's an important point there, right? Like we can all say, hey, if I'm opening the first retail outpost in Japan, it's probably going to be different than Toronto.
Right.
Right. But to your point, like, the burbs of Toronto versus downtown, probably very different.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And or different socioeconomic districts within the downtown area.
Yeah.
Right? And that does add a lot of, I have to imagine that adds a lot of complexity. And people might acknowledge that they're different, but they're sort of thinking like, great, but how do I plan for this, right? Like, what are the, it's diminishing returns to invest a lot of hours on understanding every store, right? And so, is that part of the problem that you kind of come in and tackle? Is that like
it is
the pain of not being able to understand in an efficient way what's happening?
It's two parts. You actually touched on it brilliantly. You know, so part of the problem that we're trying to help and support is exactly that. Retailers do realize, and you know, I was kind of saying it a bit tongue-in-cheek, they do realize that no two markets are the same. They do realize that not every small store is the exact same size. The challenge is how do I manage it with the current tools that I have today?
Totally.
People often ask me, you know, what's or who is your biggest competitor? And I'll say it's Microsoft Excel, right? You know, there is usually somebody in most of the clients that we go to and work with that has created this master list, and they have like the store address, the store concept type, you know, average square footage, number of fixtures, et cetera. And they figured out these variety of different methods of being able to calculate what should go into that store. Same thing with the visual merchandising teams, same thing with the product management team. So, you know, Excel is really powerful that way, and it's become a substantial tool, but it's very limited in other ways, because if I say, okay, well, let's take all of Canada and let's break it out into 67 unique characteristics in terms of how we're going to release products out, right? And with that, as we have inventory arrive at these stores, we need to have marketing that matches accordingly. We need to make sure that the language type is correct, but we're going to localize the pricing. So you have all these variables. And that's the kind of thing that you can't do in Excel, but you can do within our platform. So this idea of localization, we often refer to as your allocation. So how many allocations are you going to do for your back to school campaign? And interesting enough, most of our clients, before they start using our platform, are usually about maybe 5 to 10 allocations that they would have. So they have identified that this is going to go to our flagship stores. If we're talking about Canada, this might go to the stores that we have in Quebec, because it has to be in French. But, you know, and then they have some nuance in between. Usually within a year of using our platform, all of a sudden we see them jumping up to 20 or 25. So social economic factors come into play. Demographic information comes into play too, right? So again, if we're going to target, or we have a store in an area that's predominantly South Asian, we're seeing this a bit more, or Hispanic. We're seeing this a bit more and more with clients where they're choosing to make their graphics or some of the marketing bilingual, right? So that you do are able to talk to that demographic group. Also, you can look at availability of technology that people have. So, you know, some markets, I'll use telco, for example, some markets, Apple devices are more popular. Other markets, we see that Google devices or Samsung devices are more popular. So again, what graphic or what kind of product are we promoting in our front window? So to us, really, it's this idea of how do we support or allow you to segment your product distribution, your marketing distribution. And then the flip side of it is also how do you validate that your stores have executed your store correctly? So we have done this elaborate kind of mapping of products that are going to go out to market. We know now it's shipped. Now we want to validate that you've put these products up. Right. And so as we sit there and we make sure that the stores execute, this is a big part of our platform. So we use things like image recognition. A store can literally hold up their phone and we would use the phone's camera to cross-reference what we see, what the store has done, what products they have up and what graphics they have up against what's in our software.
That's a little big brother. Like I'm imagining some poor, like, you know, early 20s, like local store manager being like, does corporate approve? Is that what's going on there?
Yeah. You know, and people, it's interesting you say that. I mean, I've heard both ways of doing it, where some people are like, oh my God, that's super cool. And the other side, you're right. I mean, it's a bit of a micromanagement approach. However, what needs to happen though is, and you have to think about it, is there's a lot of planning that goes in. And there's a lot, if you kind of think when things start, you know, often I say, okay, we're going to come out with our spring and summer collection. We're going to design it. Then we're going to do a runway show. You know, we're going to have all the excitement around it. Or if it's a product, we're going to do consumer testing, etc. Now we have it. We've done our packaging. Everything's ready to go. We go to manufacture. Now it goes to distribution. Now the product hits our stores. Now we want to make sure the stores put it up. If it sits in the back warehouse and never gets, or in the back storeroom and never gets to front of house, no one's going to buy it, right?
So, well, you know, I mean, I was being a little glib, big brotherish. Like, I'm going to ask you a second about the tech, because to be perfectly honest, it is super cool. And I think it's also something that at least in my mind, maybe I just assume things like that happen more often, right? But I you know, this does happen. So I worked for years in hardware.
Okay.
Right. Okay. And one of the things that just made our head explode is that the shopping experience for like a $1,000 Windows PC was so much worse than the shopping experience for a $1,000 Mac. Right. And I'm dating myself because this is like 15 years ago. Right. But it was all kinds of reasons, right? It was just a bad experience. And so we tried to work with retailers and all that. But, you know, to your point on like, how do you know what's happening? A Microsoft executive walking into Best Buy to check out the shopping experience for a store, you know what? They're going to walk into a Best Buy in Redmond or Bellevue, the Seattle area where they live.
That's perfect.
And those Best Buys were great.
You're perfect.
And then when you went to Tulsa,
yeah,
or heck, you drove an hour north, like to Bellingham, you know, and it's chaotic, right? And and so, you know, I guess I have lived that. And I think it's always been a little fascinating to me just how hard it is to achieve that combination of consistency of experience versus, as you were talking about earlier, relevance for the brand, right? Or sorry, relevance for the market, the geography.
It's for the market and the brand,
And so where I'm kind of going with this, a question for you is, you know, how much of that is execution, the store, you know, being held accountable to do it right, but also being told how to do it right. How much of that is capability, right? It's just hard to manage. How much of that is something else?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it's a combination of everything. You know, I get very upset when people often refer to people who work in retail as kind of like the lowest denominator, or, you know, they don't really understand it, or et cetera. I mean, you know, Isidore Sharp, who's the founder of the Four Seasons Hotels, you know, hotel chain, you know, mentioned that, you know, the most important people in a hotel are your doorman and or door people, door person, or your cleaning staff. And, you know, because they're the ones who interact with the customer the most, right? And same thing with any brand. Like, you know, the people who work at the stores care. They show up every day. They're solely to help sell your product as a retailer or a brand. And so, you know, you have to kind of empower them. And so what we see a lot of time is, yes, there is a bit of accountability that comes through the platform in terms of this is exactly what we would like you to do, or at least some guidance. But visual merchandising has always been around. Like, it's not that it's new. What we're doing a little bit now is we're, instead of having a dedicated person that does the visual merchandising, now that some of that responsibility can be managed by the staff, so we give a tool that gives them clear instructions. And then again, what often used to happen is stores or companies will have secret shoppers, so people that they would send out to stores to kind of spy on stores and kind of audit the stores. And we're moving away from that to say, hey, do what you've done, take a picture. The nice thing about using AI and image recognition is we can give a response back to the store instantly. So it's almost an interaction that happens between the store associate and the device, versus often what a lot of companies do that don't use AI is they'll take a picture and then it's sent back. Somebody at headquarters will review that picture, email the store and say it's wrong. So it takes a bit of time.
So it's the same process, but huge latency. And
A huge latency. So that's kind of, you know, where that kind of evolution. So, you know, it is a balance. And you're right. Like, this is what happens often where an executive walks into the store and it does not look the way it's supposed to. And they lose it, you know, and that's where it all trickles down to, you know, who's going to pay for this one and whose head is going to roll aspect as well.
But I bet they lose it inefficiently, right? Because like at that point, you don't have a system. You don't have a product. You have an angry executive and a whole bunch of people who are now not doing what else they're supposed to be doing, like running around trying to fix it, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's what they have to do because it gets pushed down to the staff, right? And they have to kind of address it and kind of get through it. One thing I wanted to touch on too around image recognition, which is, you know, it's not an easy thing to do and for a variety of reasons, is that if you know how AI works and how kind of the models work, you need to train the models, right? Yep. In order for a model to work, it needs to understand what I'm looking for, what am I making a decision of. So the challenge with retail often is that you are dealing with products that haven't been in the real world for a long time. You know, Apple launches a device usually in September. It's probably coming up soon. Well, no one's going to know how that looks like until Apple has its big reveal, and then people know, but they're not going to see a close-up of it, and no one really sees Apple's marketing. So when we work with some of our telco clients, they want to use image recognition because Apple has very, very strict rules around how their products are merchandised, making sure they're up on time and they look correct. And so what happens now is that we had to figure out a way of how do we train our model when Apple is only going to give us 2 days with their content, but none of this content is actually in market. So in developing our image recognition solution, it really came about to of creating a way that we can create or kind of have all this marketing that we just got a day ago and have it in every possible scenario. It's almost like finding Waldo, right? Like we're going to put it everywhere that we can, and we're going to use that to train the system on being able to execute. So that poster could be on a wall.
What a fascinating
problem. It could be behind a glass. It could be behind a phone. It could be partly obstructed by something. So there's a variety of different things that could happen that cause the, you know, that could cause the image recognition not to work. Anyways, so there's a lot of challenges. So this is not as simple as HQ saying, hey, we want this. It's like, this is something that we're going to do. Now, how do we do it and how do we solve that problem? Because what it does do, it means that we can give instant feedback to the stores. The stores understand what they should do. It really saves on hours and hours of a human at HQ going through millions of photographs, you know, and having to validate that all before Apple comes in and you know, gives them hell for not executing correctly.
Well, I love that story and it makes it really real. And so, and it kind of leads to another interesting question, right? I think certainly over the last couple of years and few years, I think we've been living in a world where more and more people kind of assume technology can do anything, right? Yeah. And, you know, there have been some unbelievable advancements, but it turns out that it's usually not as simple to deploy. So, you know, one of my questions for you is your partners, your clients, the retailers, the people that you're working with, what are their assumptions about what technology should be able to do for them? And how has that been changing over the couple of years? Like, do they come up to you and they're like, well, of course, it's super easy to, you know, use the security camera in the store to instantly get all the information we need? Or do they just have no idea? Like, what's been changing?
That's such a good question. And you worded it in a good way that made it complicated. If you worded it a different way, I would have had a quick response.
I'll pretend I did that on purpose.
The quick response usually is, you know, do customers or clients expect technology to solve all problems? And the quick answer to that is yes. And the reality, of course, is no.
Right.
But it's a mix. It's really, really mixed. So retail, brick and mortar retail today, is still very much a interaction between humans, right? It is an experience. We do want to talk to somebody. We do want feedback. We want somebody for buying clothing to compliment us that it looks good. You know, and it does vary by people's own personal preference, but it is a factor in terms of how retail works today. I think the use of technology, the way we see it, is that we do not want to replace or take away the human aspect. But my vision or my dream has always been to kind of see the bridge between what happens online, I feel can almost happen, not quite as fast in real time, in brick and mortar. So what I mean by that is if I go onto a website and I'm browsing up, like looking for measuring tapes, and I'm on a Home Depot, one of those sites, I'm going to be fed a variety of content and ads related to measuring tapes and different options, and I have lots of choices, etc. From that point on, I find it's, you know, so it allows me to be informed. I can quickly research, I can find, and then I can make my purchase. In a lot of ways, I also think brick and mortar can be, you know, so if we understand at the store level who our customer is, if we understand if between 10 o'clock and 12 o'clock, we tend to get people to come in who buy these kind of products. And then from 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock, we often see people buying these other products, that we can almost curate the store and even change the marketing, et cetera, to kind of align with what the consumers are looking for. I'll give an example. We did a test with one of our clients because they were trying to increase traffic into their stores, not conversion. So they weren't trying to sell. They were trying to increase foot traffic into the stores in the mornings. And so what we identified is we noticed that there's a lot of elderly people that were walking the malls in the winter to get exercises, to get exercise. And so we said, well, instead of playing that iPhone, whatever it was back then, you know, commercial on your digital signage and also in your print signage, let's change that marketing to say, come in and learn how to Skype with your grandchild.
Yep.
Okay. So the idea really was all we wanted to do is get traffic to come in. Our client did not care if they were with another carrier or not. What they just wanted to do is have that engagement with those customers or potential customers as they came through. So this is the idea really where, you know, we talk about cookies when you go to a website and, you know, the, you know, it kind of follows you. But this is the kind of insights that can be used. And this kind of goes back to the full circle where in our platform, you know, where we started looking at floor plans and fixtures, and then we added the marketing and we added the products in the store. But then we started to say, well, give us some insights, inventory, give us some insights on your sales. And now we do a lot of work on understanding who the customer is, what transactions happen in the morning versus the afternoon versus the evening, and then tying that together. And now with computers and AI and a lot of the tools that we have, we can start predicting what products are going to sell when. We can start predicting how to feed that forward. So this idea that the technology is used not really as who I'm going to interact with. I don't want to buy my new sweater from a computer. But what I'd like to do when I walk into the store is I'd actually like to see the sweater that I'm most likely to buy, right? And the color I'm looking for, et cetera, that's relevant to me. And that's, I think, really the power there.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Well, I mean, this is really interesting. I want to ask you about kind of one more area of data and the application of technology, right? Before we started recording, we were talking about what sounded to me like a little bit of the resurgence of physical inventory tracking and RFIDs. Like, what's going on there? Because, you know, I walk into a store all the time where they're supposed to have inventory of something, it's not where it's supposed to be. And if they can't even if they can't even keep track of what's in the store, right, to, you know, 4.9's level of accuracy, I can't imagine they know a lot about what's going on in the store. So what's going on in terms of helping stores keep track of their physical inventory, and what can they do with that information?
Yeah, no, it's funny. We were talking about that casually before, and, you know, it's probably one of the most exciting things for me lately in terms of technology, but oddly enough, RFID technology is not new. You know, it's been around for years, probably 20 years or so. And I just love the fact that there seems to be a new interest. Walmart was really instrumental in kind of bringing that technology forward about 20 years ago. Their vision of how it's going to be used was, yeah, like, how do we know if a product is on the floor? How do we know if that product is missing from the floor? And, you know, how do we track our inventory as it comes in, right? You know, people back then were talking about just-in-time inventory and, you know, minimizing how much was stored in the back of the stores. And so when we started seeing apparel companies implementing RFID, and Uniqlo, if anybody's been there recently, they have nailed it. So that you walk in there and you buy, you know, 10 t-shirts and some underwear and socks, and, you know, you got your big bag, and before they used to scan it one at a time. Now you just take all that stuff, you put it in a bin, and instantaneously you see your full bill of what you need to
pay.
That
is so how it should be. That is
Yeah. Isn't it great?
I didn't even realize that it annoyed me that it wasn't like that until you
said. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's amazing, right? But that's where, again, the application. So, you know, that really is on the consumer side, but from our perspective, and this is a story, another quick story that we had is one of our largest clients, we managed about 11,000 stores for them. And they said to us, you know, we love the platform. It's really been instrumental in helping us plan better. It's really been instrumental in us being able to localize our marketing better. It's been fantastic because we get to know when we launch a campaign, which stores are compliant, which stores aren't. But he goes, the one thing that we still run into is if I walk into a store 2 to 3 weeks after a campaign is launched, it looks horrible. Goes back to your use case where you talked about, you know, anything not near HQ is not going to look great. And that is true. And it's not necessary because the stores are lazy. I mean, people kind of came in and shopped the store and maybe inventory hasn't been replenished, whatever the case. But it's this ability to kind of monitor what is on the floor and what should be on the floor. And so where Optimum Retailing comes in, which is a really kind of fun application that we've done, is we can pick up through the antennas, RFID antennas, everything that's in the front of the store. And we can do the same thing in the back of the store, in the where the inventory is stored. And so with our platform, we know what should be in the front, what should be on display, whether it's signage, whether it's products, whether it's maybe a device or a dummy phone that's used for display purposes. So we can monitor that. If we see that there's a product missing, okay, at the end of the day, before, instead of a store associate kind of walking the floor or having to spend a half an hour with their, you know, piece of paper trying to figure out what should go back in that empty spot, our system will generate a list of all the elements that need to go onto the floor, and they will go into the back, bring it to the front, and our system will show them where to put it. Because through the RFID, we can see what is missing, what's not. One step further, which is kind of cool too, is if they're out of that inventory, because we can cross-reference what's in the back, we can also give them a recommendation of what you should put out. Because you're out of the blue sweaters, put out the brown sweaters instead, right? And so giving that the real-time recommendation. So through RFID, we're able now to track actual inventory. And the one thing that you touched on, which happens to us all, is we go online, we're going to go down and buy something, but we see they only have one available. And we know that 99% of the time that one means they have zero. Yeah. Or it's probably there, but no one knows where it is. So another use case is we see a lot more with our apparel clients is that with the RFID, if somebody picks up a pair of jeans and they walk around the store and then they decide they're not going to buy the jeans because they're going to buy a sweater, they'll just leave the jeans in the sweater section. But if it's the last one of that size, essentially normal, it'll be gone, right? No one's going to check the sweater section for the jeans. But now with the RFID, we can see now that product's in the wrong spot. We can prompt the store at the end of the day to make sure they move it to the correct spot. So
I love it.
It does really provide that level of visibility for everyone.
This has been fascinating. I think we've gotten, you know, some really concrete examples, right, of how the application of, and I don't mean to undersell the difficulty of what you're doing, but I think it's actually, I think it's important value. You know, relatively straightforward technologies put together in a smart way,
yeah,
help, you know, make a meaningful innovation difference. Like you said, RFID has been around for 20 years, although I know that the cost curve has come down and, you know, better triangulation, yeah, and all that. But still, it's been around for 20 years, but that actual, yeah, scenario of the misplaced jeans or the shopping basket instantly, yeah, obsessed, like, hasn't been there. So
yeah,
it's that's awesome. Well, so my last question before we get into one little fun section where I want to get to know you a little better,
sure,
is I want to know about the, you know, how the retail industry thinks about innovation. What is your favorite thing, and what is your least favorite or most frustrating thing about how retail approaches innovation? And that's a broad question. Answer it however you like.
Yeah, that's a good question too. Favorite and least favorite. I think corporately, a lot of retailers and brands look at brick and mortar retail as being dead. We've heard that brick and mortar retail, you know, the internet was replacing everything, you know, Main Street is no longer going to exist, people are not going to shop anymore, etc. And it frustrates me because of this view of, you know, the potential demise of our brick and mortar retail space, that we should not invest into it, it's not that important, and, you know, it's a dying, you know, channel, you know. And so to me, to hear that frustrates me, because what I see now is, yes, brick and mortar retail from maybe 20 years ago is dead, right? where you can't find a sales associate. If you kind of think of some of the old department stores, you're lost. You can't find that little widget when you're walking around the hardware store. Like that is gone, and that should be gone. But like anything in the world, things evolve and they get better. Our needs evolve. And more importantly, you know, humans still need human interaction. And so that experience of shopping, there's a great brand that we're working with called Faherty. And you know, they make their stores fun. Like every store is unique. Every store has like great characteristics. You'll be offered a drink. You can sit down while you're going through your shopping experience. So it's not just about a transaction. It's kind of overall the experience. So that really frustrates me when I hear that discussion, and more so when companies decide not to make the investment into improving the retail environments. They tend to more shut it down or even run them as discount, you know, facilities where you can go there and get stuff at clearance. So that really makes me sad. I think on the part,
Don't give up because the world is changing.
Oh yeah, no. I
think that's actually really clear. Obviously, you have to adapt and evolve and all that, but don't give up because the world is changing. Yeah. Okay, sorry, I interrupted you, but that's so.
No. I think that's important to cap that off. On the positive side, you know, in retail, in terms of what makes me most excited is the kind of the revival of innovation that's coming into the space. So, you know, I hate to use it because it's often talked about a lot, but, you know, we're seeing AI come in a variety of different ways. We're trying to use it again to really simplify things that are often quite complicated. And on two sides, like we're aware that we want to make the experience from an HQ perspective as positive as possible. We also want to make it as positive as possible for the store associates. But also with AI and kind of really looking at understanding our consumers, it's going to affect the world in so many positive ways. You know, if we're not producing things that we don't need, then we have a lot less waste. You know, we can reduce the amount of stuff that we're wasting. And that happens a lot. Because today, I would say to somebody like, well, why did you make 10,000 units of that particular product? And it's like, well, that's what we did last year. Yeah. But did you sell through all that? Why can't, I don't know, because I just do the forecasting, I place the order, I'm not responsible once it hits the store, right? So it's this idea of, you know, and this is where we come in, like really care about the full loop, like how do we optimize things? So it's not just necessarily about money, but it's also around waste. And we see a lot of that, and we get asked a lot of that, especially in Europe and the UK, because that's a big part of the retail space. And it's driving innovation to improve experience, but also looking at a more broader sense of how do we make, you know, everything around us better, more sustainable, right? And I think that to me is the exciting part, that we're going to start to see more products, more variety that are relevant to its market. But then again, we're going to be able to make sure that we're producing what people want to buy. Super fun.
Yeah, super fun. No, thank you so much. So Sam, thank you for this conversation. We're coming to the
end. Oh no, thank you. This is great. I love it.
Yeah, it's been super fun. Actually, we've gone really long. I don't know what we're gonna have to hack and edit. We'll see who
we'll find a new topic to talk about.
No, it's great. So I want to end with just a few kind of fun, like off the cuff questions. And that, I think that helps people get to know you and sometimes spark some good conversations. So I'm gonna ask you to answer quickly. Don't think.
Okay. Okay.
And I'm gonna start with something really easy.
Yeah.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have both, but yeah.
I have both too. Actually, I like cats, but I have a dog now, which I'm very close to.
You know, one thing I will say though, I just saw one of those memes going around the internet. I don't know if I saw it on Reels or something, but of a cat swimming out of a flood in like the Midwest US, right? And the caption is great. Like, you know, like dogs look panicked, people look drenched in boats, you know, all escaping the flood. And this cat just looked mad.
I was going to say, look pissed. Yeah. How dare they do this to me? Yeah.
So there is that. All right. Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Okay. And you live in Toronto. You don't have either. I guess you have beaches.
We don't have either. I mean, I'm an avid skier. I've been skiing my life. But if I had to choose, I would. Actually, the hard one. Like, if it's skiing or lying on the beach, I would say skiing. But if I had to climb a mountain or sit on a beach or walk along a beach, I would take a beach.
There's something to be said for a warm beach and a cool drink.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Especially in February.
Yeah, no doubt. Favorite store to walk into?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I would say from a visual perspective, more so probably about five before COVID, not as much after COVID, would be Uniqlo. Mm-hmm. My favorite is one of their big stores on Broadway in New York City. And it's always in the fall when they have their sweaters. So they will have sweaters in about 15 different colors. And their ceilings are about 20 feet high. And they just merchandise. I mean, they use their products as part of this, the visuals within the store. And I always was amazed at the ratio of staff to customers was great. So you could always find somebody. If you were downstairs in the women's section and asked about a t-shirt in the men's section, they would actually walk you all the way upstairs to find you that t-shirt. You know, and even the fact that they're using RFID today, you know, it's looking at, you know, what is a pain point? And people love shopping there, but standing in line for, you know, sometimes 20 minutes for half an hour, not fun. And they solved that now. You can literally check out within minutes. So I think as an overall from a retail perspective, you know, I know it's fast fashion, but I really think they have done a great job. And think about it. 20 years ago, they didn't exist. You know, the Gap was a big player and they have, you know, Gap struggling and these guys are just growing. So I think it's a fantastic job they've done.
That's amazing. And I'm totally going to look into it as an example of that, like innovation to solve an acute customer problem, right? Because you're right. Like yeah. 20 minutes in line sucks. Nobody wants it.
Yeah.
All right. Last one. Tech you're most excited about.
Tech I'm most excited about. Strangely enough, I'll go back to RFID. I mean, we're doing tons of work with AI and Gen AI where we can, you know, with Gen AI produce marketing on the fly for the stores and content. But I think RFID, you know, this idea that we can track, you know, like if you walk into the store, you're looking for a pair of pants, and if the store associate can honestly tell you, you know what, Ian, I can see that that product is 10 blocks away. If you come back in 2 hours, I will go in the back, I'll pull it out of the box and I'll bring it to you. It's just not in the store right now. Like I think the ability to kind of know where products are, being able to provide that full understanding, I think is going to be fantastic. And it's really going to change how we shop and how we interact. Because again, like think of some of the pain points today is thinking the store has something, but they don't, the store associate not finding something, or you not being able to walk in to find something. So there's just so many layers of fun things you can do both on the consumer facing side. You know, a customer of mine said, oh, we could almost do like Google Maps or Waze within a store. So you put in your product and it kind of guides you to where it is. I'm like, yeah, for sure. You know, like, again, just knowing, you know, because we can track where those products are. So I think that to me kind of, it's basic, you know, it's not sexy, but it definitely is to me something super exciting.
That's amazing. Doesn't have to be sexy to be exciting. really good. Well, Sam, thank you for joining us on Innovator.
Awesome, Ian. I really appreciate it. Yeah, thanks again.
For anyone in the audience that's interested in following you, learning more about you or about Optimum Retailing, what's the best way? Are you on LinkedIn? Hit the website?
Yeah, LinkedIn. If you go to LinkedIn, look up Sam Vise, V as in Victor, I-S-E, at Optimum Retailing. Best way, you know, we're always looking for, you know, fun and exciting things. I'll tell you one thing I always say to my team is that I don't want to ever be the Nokia or BlackBerry of our industry, you know, and I ask them every day to try to make anything that we're doing today obsolete tomorrow because, you know, technology is moving fast and it's fun to be innovative and to sit back and think we've nailed it because, you know, we figured something out today. There's somebody coming around the corner that can do something better, faster, and cheaper. And I love innovation. So I think this idea of really kind of finding people and, you know, things that we can do that are outside of the box are super, super fun.
You are speaking my language. Thanks again. And I hope you just have a great weekend.
Take care.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Alchemist X Innovators Inside. Thanks for listening. If you found value in today's discussion, be sure to subscribe to our podcast and check out our segments on YouTube. Links and follow-ups are in the show notes. And if you have questions you want us to feature in future episodes, email innovators@alchemistaccelerator.com. Stay tuned for more insider stories and practical insights from leaders crafting our future.